What he's saying is off base and out of touch. He doesn't know what he's talking about. But the theme of this is becoming hard to afford for many people, we don't disagree with that. So can we come together, explain why we're having to charge the way we are charging?
Welcome to the So Your Vet Now What, the podcast. This is a show that serves as your audio mentor in your journey as a veterinarian. And each week, our awesome host, Dr. Mariah McCauley, will be bringing you insightful short-form interviews with happy, successful vets who are eager to share their career and clinical tips to make your life easier. So whether you're a final year vet student or a recent graduate, this podcast is your trusted companion on the pathway to success in veterinary medicine. Over to you, Mo.
Welcome back to So You're a Vet, Now What? I am your host, Dr. Mariah McCauley. This is part two of my conversation with Dr. Molly Brinkman. Last week, we opened the can of worms that was Dr. Evan Levine's TikTok video and the New York Times post about the cost of veterinary care. This week, you will hear part two of the conversation in which we cover how we should be responding to our clients' questions about the cost of care. All right, let's jump right in. In a practical sense, so the New York Times article that came out at the same time, Dr. Evan Levine, his video, and like there's a number of other videos, like we constantly see them on TikTok, on Instagram, of someone being like, veterinary medicine is so expensive, blah, blah, blah. Molly, like you see this a lot more because you're on the TikTok side of things. How would you say, in like practical steps way, how should we respond when we do see those videos as a profession so that we, again, are using that airspace appropriately?
Yeah. And I'm speaking from someone who is still learning the best ways to do that. And I posted three things in response to what he said. The first was sort of like, this is not the right person to be saying this. The second was, okay, he's talking about lab work. Yes, we mark up our lab work. Here's why, and here's why that's different from what he's talking about in human medicine. And then just the cost comparison of blood work in human medicine to vet medicine, meaning they're both marked up just in different ways. You know, I think he means I'm being a bully for talking about it. I've tried to be careful to not like come after him as a person, just respond to the things he's saying. Do I love the way all of that has gone? Probably not. You know, there's a lot of like things that have spun off from that and comments that are not nice about him for sure. I think we have to choose what is productive to address. So people talk bad about veterinary medicine on social media all the time, especially on TikTok. And I've seen lots of it. And I don't know that I've ever made like an actual reel or post to address anyone talking about it. I think this felt like an appropriate person to respond to because he is in the human medical field and is a respected medical professional. And so I think we need to pick and choose what we address, what we give airtime to, like you said, because we also don't want to constantly be showing or highlighting that these people are saying these things. And I think this is a toll on mental health of veterinary professionals. Like sharing someone saying these things and opening up your comment section to other people saying horrible things is adding to the vile things that veterinarians and veterinary technicians and veterinary assistants see on the internet. And I definitely don't want to add to the mental burden that is being in this profession. So I think that's why it's important that we pick and choose. And I think in like a social media realm, a lot of my followers are pet parents who have their own veterinarians and go to the vet's office, and many of them struggle to afford that. And so I do think it's important to say, hey, this guy, what he's saying is not accurate, but I do think it would be great. And I think I know that this is happening here and in other podcasts and places. It's going to be on display. Like, what he's saying is off base and out of touch. He doesn't know what he's talking about. But the theme of this is becoming hard to afford for many people, we don't disagree with that. And so can we come together, explain why we're having to charge the way we are charging, and help people with ways to make it more affordable, things like pet insurance, and also as a community, as a profession, open the dialogue of what can we do to help in the long run, because it isn't sustainable if it keeps climbing the way it has. I think this is a good time to open the can, and I think good things are coming from it.
I agree with that.
I do think that some vets in America this week are going to hear from clients about it. And I think that's probably, for the most part, going to be okay.
Yeah.
I think it's an okay conversation to have even in your clinic about, it is marked up and here's why.
Yeah, no, I think that is an incredibly important conversation to have, because again, it's that teamwork that we have with a client, that veterinary client-patient relationship. I know, like, you've definitely experienced it where clients, they feel like almost a little bit ashamed when they ask about the cost of medicine, as if that makes it us look down on them. And I'm like, no, this is a very important conversation to have. I'm glad you're asking about this. And so I feel like we shouldn't be shying away from those type of conversations where we are trying to bring understanding and education to the playing field. And as you kind of touched on it and how we respond on social media with the comment sections, but we know from personal experience, even veterinarians can be some of the cruelest people. Like, we've had that happen where we're basically biting each other's heels. And one thing, as you touched on mental health and the impact it has, one thing that I want to highlight is how we practice talking about each other impacts our own mental health and impacts how we view ourselves. So if you are on social media and you're constantly commenting, be like, oh yeah, that person's terrible, I can't believe they said that, and blah, 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 like constantly over and over and over again, that is the conversation that you're having in your head all the time. So that in your day-to-day life, that is what you're thinking about other people. And chances are you're going to start thinking about that about yourself too. So there is a huge, huge knock-on effect to how we respond on social media to these type of scenarios. And I implore you guys to really think about that for yourself, but then also in how you're responding to these videos and how you are commenting. It impacts the rest of the profession, because then everyone else is reading those comments. And something that I remember, it's actually from Cody Creelman, that he was talking about way back in the day when he had the cow vet stuff on YouTube and how he would respond to comments. It wasn't to change the mind of that individual. It was to help educate the next person who came behind and read the comment thread. Like, that is the kind of additional thinking that we have to have when we are responding to comments, or when even in person, when we are responding about situations, because there's someone listening in, they're hearing what you have to say. And if they're constantly hearing you or seeing you bash other people, I don't know if I want to be friends with you, honestly.
Yeah.
So there's that side of things that I wanted to make sure that we address, because we've seen it. We've either been the source, or not the source, but, well, maybe the source, or the object of fixation.
Yeah, I mean, like, guilty, it's very easy to get sucked in and frustrated, and people are brutal on social media. And there are people being absolutely vile in the comments of these posts right now. And it is easy to get sucked in, and like, guilty is charged in situations. Do I think that the emotion that is stirred in vet professionals by these, I think it's righteous anger and emotion. I think it's important that we maintain, you know, composure. And like you said, remember that the one person that is saying the vile, terrible thing, you know, we're not going to change their mind. And it only turns other people off if we returned with hate. Yeah. And people are passionate. Someone has gone to my clinic, Google, and left a nasty review.
I remember
about
this. Yes. Oh my gosh. Well, did that ever get
like
taken
now,
down?
This too.
Oh, about
that was a different one. That was so crazy. That was just about me talking about giving trazodone 48 hours before a stressful event. No, someone about this has gone on our page and left this huge review about Molly and how I'm so unprofessional for talking, you know, about this. So. The point is, people are like, they are very mad about things.
DeLulu.
And they're very mad. Yes, it's very actually kind of harassment, but I think Google will take that one down. But yeah, I mean, people are passionate and they're mean, and life is hard, and people are going through things, and sometimes they take it out on the internet to strangers on TikTok. I do think there is an audience that is hearing what some of us are saying. I have had several people comment and DM me like, thank you for breaking that down. That makes so much more sense. I've had people message me and say, honestly, like when I saw his video, it's made me think like, oh my gosh, yeah. Is my vet doing this? And they were like, so then when you broke down the difference between how in human med, it's a separate lab and you all, you know, charge for it. They're like, that makes sense now. Like, yeah. Thank you. I'm calm again.
Are you a new or recent veterinary graduate? If so, listen up. My course, So You're a Vet Now What, has been put together specifically for you. We focus on the non-clinical skills. Don't tune out. This is not as dull as it sounds, I promise you. In fact, almost every career problem that people face are due to not having well-developed non-clinical skills. The skills that I'm talking about are things like client communication, so you have great relationships with clients, emotional intelligence, so you've got great relationships with your teammates, effective negotiation skills, so you can get paid what you are worth, management of imposter syndrome, and how to build formidable resilience. They're not just skills, they are prerequisites vital for success in financial and emotional well-being. This course serves as an essential stepping stone to your success. So let's take the leap together. I will be your mentor as we go through 12 modules helping you transition from being a student to being a fully rounded professional. Head to www.drdavenichol.com/SYAV-class to learn more. Now back to the show.
And so that makes me feel, you know, I definitely have felt a little self-conscious the last few days. Like, have I stepped in it? Like, am I being a mean girl on the internet? Like, my content is usually very like positive and fun and whatever. But I have like a very like Enneagram 8 confrontational side when I feel like I need to defend people. So that has helped me remember like, you know, no, they're like, I think there is some good that comes from this. And if I could go back, I probably would just explain, you know, our side of it and have him totally out of it.
Yeah. But like you said, it's opening up conversation and dialogue that in a way was kind of a touchy subject. I feel like we, again, as veterinary professionals, we're not good at talking about money. Sorry. Like we're really no, bad at it.
We are not.
We hate it. Mm-hmm. At least I really hate it.
Yeah, and so I do too. I'm like, I'm the doctor. Don't ask me. I don't know what it will cost.
I mean, like,
but that's like, that's something else we probably need to embrace.
Yeah. Is having open dialogue with our other colleagues and our clients about the cost of veterinary medicine. Because as you said, like when you actually broke down, like where the money's going to and what it does, clients were like, oh, that makes sense. Like, okay. And kind of going off of that little spin, I just pulled up the New York Times Facebook post that had the honestly kind of inflammatory title, which is clickbait. Mm-hmm. I get that. Yeah. Which it literally says, were you stuck with a big vet bill? Question mark. Tell us about it. And I will say, normally when I open these things, I'm like, well, okay, do I do it? Do I not? Do I read the comment section? Do I not? What am I like? Am I ready emotionally for this?
I have not.
And I will say, I am so encouraged by this comment section.
Oh.
Yeah. Right?
What? I know, right? I haven't looked. Everyone keeps sending me the New York Times thing. And I'm like, I can only do one like turd at a time. Like I can't.
Which granted, I have it set for the most relevant, meaning the things that have the most comments on it, which can go either way. But first one is like, I love my wonderful vets. Yes, vet care can be expensive. No, I don't make a big salary. But they go on to be like, I've never felt stuck with a big vet bill. I'm like, oh, okay. let's see. This other person's like, far from the feeling of resentment for which you seem to be probing, I feel overwhelming gratitude for my veterinarian. I'm like, oh. And then someone else is like, the New York Times has no idea the cost involved in running a private practice vet clinic. All we want to, this is like an actual professional. All we want to do is help save pets' lives. And people are like, comment up liking that, like 876 on that one.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And it says like,
that is encouraging.
Someone else's cat decided to eat yarn overnight. First off, the surgery cost $1,500. Like that was everything. I'm like, what? I wonder where in the United States that was. Not my favorite amount to spend, but not unreasonable or excessive, in my opinion. So, yeah, like, I keep on going down, and like, I was like full on put the barrier up, being like, okay, this is gonna suck.
Yeah, that is
reading
scary.
This. And as I'm mm-hmm, literally scrolling mm-hmm. down and down and down, everyone being like, no, I don't feel like the cost of veterinary medicine is completely unheard of, which again, that is stark contrast to what's happening in the UK. Like, stark contrast.
Yeah.
Because again, here we have human healthcare, but we are see very
people are used to paying for healthcare.
They're used to paying for healthcare here. Whereas in the UK, people are not used to paying for healthcare. So when they see a 1,500-pound like surgery or something, they're like, "What? Where did that come from?"
That's jarring.
It's very jarring.
Yeah.
Again, we don't know where veterinary medicine is going to go in the next 10, 15, 20, 30 years, but we're here for the ride and we are here for open dialogue, which I guess like we've kind of touched on it already, but we've talked about how we respond as a profession. But how would you say in the last couple minutes that we have that we should be responding for our clients? Because there's like obviously responding on social media that our clients will see, but we'll talk specifically about having those financial conversations in the consult room. Because again, we're talking to new grads and vet students here, and something that vet school does not prepare you for, because again, we're dealing with other things that you're trying to learn, but you're not really prepared for how you walk into that consult room to say, all right, I need, like, in order for us to do what we need to do here today, I'm asking you guys to spend $1,500, $2,500. Like,
okay. In my practice, we don't regularly give people our estimates before we do anything. So they've never done that because they've just never needed to, which obviously is a privilege. We just have not needed to do that for routine things. But I've definitely worked in practices that did that, that offered a paper estimate, itemized invoice estimate for everything we ever did, even in an affluent area. So I've seen both of those things. And honestly, like, sometimes that has felt awkward because you do feel like, oh, like, is someone going to be offended if I give them an estimate? And they're like, oh, yeah, of course I can afford that. Like, why are you giving me that? But where the like rubber meets the road is when you have clients who do have cost concerns, and either they're very vocal about that, or they, you can sort of tell when someone feels awkward about it. They don't want to say, like, they feel bad asking, what does that cost? Or they feel bad saying, that's too much for me. And so I try really hard in practice to make people feel more comfortable about that by saying things like, do you want to talk about the cost of all of those things? I would want to know the cost of these things if it were me. So if you want me to like go through that, I'm happy to do that with you. You know, if someone's already sort of asked about financials, I sometimes will just kind of regroup and ask them, okay, like, do you have a specific budget that you can do today? And we can sort of tailor our plan to that. So I try really hard because this sort of applies in a lot of things in life that are sort of awkward conversations, but I try to acknowledge someone feeling weird about something and give them a verbal pass to not feel weird about it. And I think that makes them feel like you all are on the same plane at the same level. And sometimes I'll sort of make a joke about it just to sort of like cut through the tension. I think that that's important, and but that's a skill, right? Because some people don't want you to talk about money and they get offended if you're like asking them if they can afford XYZ. I have experienced that. But for the most part, most people appreciate whether they need to know it or not. And I do think one thing I've thought about just from all this reading people's comments and experiences as pet parents, I think we probably should offer estimates, like in my practice and probably all practices, we should let people know they have the option of asking for an itemized estimate for everything that we're going to do. And for some people, you know, vaccines and a heartworm test and an annual fecal and prevention, I mean, for a lot of people, that's a lot of money to do all at once. And I do think it's important that we let people know, like, we're willing to work with them as far as, you know, what's vital right now, what can we space out, what can we come back and do in a month or whatever. making sure people know about things like care credit and pet insurance and preventatives to keep them from being sick and needing to be hospitalized.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Everything about that, like, I just love the level of clinical empathy that you're sharing with that. Because again, like, we are on the same team. I'm not walking into the consult room being like, okay, this is how much you have to spend. And if you don't, you're a bad dog owner. Because I feel like that is the fear that a lot of people have, is if we say, this is how much it is, and they say, I don't want to do that, or I can't do that today, that we think that they're a bad dog owner. Like, that's the common theme that I see for people.
Yeah.
And to be able to say, no, like, I want to make this manageable. Say, asking things like, after you give the estimate, to be like, can we do this for Fluffy today? Because it brings our attention back on that patient that both of us are in that room for, to make sure that we can do everything appropriate for that patient. But then also making sure that they understand that, like, medicine, like, I'll say it a lot of times that, like, medicine is not black and white. It is very individual for that specific patient. And we're going to come together as a team to make a plan for Fluffy. And a lot of times by using that type of language, clients, they take their guard down a little bit more and they're like, oh, okay, this vet isn't just trying to rob me of all my money type of thing. And like in our practice, like, I do end up going over the charges of everything, even for wellnesses, because I have had a number of clients be like, honestly, arguing about the cost of veterinary medicine. And I find that it saves our receptionist quite a bit of grief when they, because then the client leaves the room, they go up to the receptionist. And the receptionist will be like, okay, we did like 3 vaccines and a blood test today. This is how much it is. And if I, as the doctor, haven't already gone over that cost, I have a number of clients that just blast the receptionist for the cost of the care that they got today, which is completely unreasonable. Like, there's the receptionist isn't responsible for that. They're just the messenger.
I know. I feel so bad for them so many times.
Oh, goodness. So again, like, as a new grad, if you're walking into these consult rooms, trying to use language that shows clinical empathy, that shows that you are on the same team as that client, you want what's best for that patient, that, again, both of you are in that consult room at that moment for that specific patient. And if you're able to do that, you're going to bring the client on board with you a lot more. And so that when you do go over that estimate, like, there's not going to be as much pushback, I feel like, at the end of the day. So I really love everything that you just said there. That was beautiful. Yeah. I love it. Yeah.
And I think too, one thing I didn't say that I think I want to say is that another thing is acknowledging, just like when we're talking about a bigger thing, a sick pet needs surgery, a big diagnostic, an ultrasound or something. I think it's important to acknowledge, like, this is a significant amount of money. And I say that all the time. Like, they say, okay, an abdominal ultrasound, how much is that going to cost? So that's going to cost this much money. And I will immediately say, and I fully recognize that that is a large sum of money. And, you know, here's why it costs that. And here's why it's very valuable information. And I just think that immediate recognition. And I think some people would say, oh, like, you shouldn't call things expensive. But, like, I'm not saying it's not important. I'm just acknowledging, like, I know that's a significant amount of money. Like, that would be significant for me. Do I think you should do it if you can? Yes, I do. But I acknowledge that it's significant, and that maybe affects your family and your budget and your life this month. And I think that's okay. I think there's sort of this, I at least was taught sort of that. Like, I don't know where that came from, but this mindset of, like, you don't want to, like, cheapen what we're doing. We're doctors. Like, you don't need to explain that is expensive, but that's okay. Like, it is. It's okay.
Yeah. I feel like the second part to that is that you're explaining the why, like, you're explaining the value of that additional cost. Because if you do say that's expensive, like, that's just going to cheapen it if you leave it just there. But if you go on to say, yeah, I understand this is an additional cost, and here's why it is an additional cost, and here's the value behind it. Because again, bringing them on board to that is what's super important. And again, like, everything kind of ties together from everything we've talked about from the start of us being this, like, at least for me, I was a bit more emotional at the start of today's episode.
Same.
But everything ties together. Like, it isn't like we had this one situation, but I think it has it's a beautiful opportunity to open up this dialogue within our profession, within our peers like here, but then also with our clients, because this isn't a situation that's going to go away. I was almost going to call it a problem, but it's not a problem. I think it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity that's not going to go away. And I'm glad that it's not going to go away because it's an important conversation to have.
No, it's not.
Because, yeah, nothing is free, honestly. We are going to have to deal with money from here on out. But I know time is running short. But Molly, anything else that you want to add to that conversation?
I just want to make sure that both human and veterinary professionals know that they are very important and very selfless for doing what they do. Even Dr. Levine is a very important part of the medical profession. And I do think, like, on the human side, he has taken up a cause to try to help human patients. And I appreciate that about him. And I think deep down somewhere, like, he is thinking about humans. And I hope that he will learn things from the situation. I hope we will learn things from the situation, and that we can all feel like we're on a team with our clients, and we're on a team, and the goal is to make pets healthy and give them comfort, and because they do the same for us.
I think that's wonderful. Oh, goodness.
That's all I got.
I know, but this has been a fun episode. I feel like we covered a lot of ground. Oh my goodness.
We did in an hour.
Yes, I'm kind of impressed with us, to be fair.
I know.
So I want you guys to go and check out Molly's TikTok and Instagram. Go show her some love on her recent videos. Also, like, keep the conversation open. Like, let's keep this going so that we can have some positive change within our profession. But otherwise, that's all I have for you guys this week.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, Molly, thank you once again for coming on. Again, we'll have to have you on in the future, of course. But until next time, y'all. See ya.
So that's it for another show. Thank you so much to Dr. Mariah and her guests for today's tips. And if you're interested in learning more about what we do to support early stage vets in their careers, then check out my book, So Your Vet Now What, or Non-Clinical Skills Training Class of the same name. Until next time, take care.